Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Doctors of Running podcast, where we, a group of doctors of physical therapy, discuss the art and science of running and the stuff that we put on our feet. Today, I'll be hosting. I'm Nathan Brown, and I am here at the round table with Dr. David Salas and Dr. Matthew Klein, and we are here for a buy or sell episode. It's been a while since we've done one of these, and we have a lot of buyer sells that have been inspired by your questions that you've left for us through email and through YouTube comments and things like that. So thank you for interacting with us so that we can create podcast episodes that are talking about the stuff that y'all care about. So thanks for engaging with us. To give a little timestamp on the recording date for this, it is Sunday, April 28th at halftime of Game 4 of the Bucks-Pacers. Currently, the Bucks do not have Giannis, they do not have Dame, and Bobby got himself kicked out with a double technical, and nobody cares about this except some of us at Doctors of Running. We care about the NBA a little bit, but that's not why people listen. But they're only down 3 at halftime. They're shooting like 60% from the field. There's a chance, y'all, and I could look like a fool when this releases, because this won't release for like 10 days, where they'll be out, probably out of the playoffs at that point. But I got to keep the hope alive.
What's the series at right now?
1-2. We're down 1-2. What?
Okay.
We lost game 2 at home, and then game 3, we I don't know how we stuck around. We went down like 20 in the first quarter, and then we came back and sent it to overtime. Middleton hit some crazy threes, like with time expiring basically to tie it. Yeah. And then we lost in overtime, but it was a fun game. And that's what basketball's about, right? Plus Bach, yeah, our media manager, is a Pacers fan, and I would be happy for him because they've had a tough road. You know, they have not been, and we had a championship a couple years ago.
Yeah, he's been a very loyal Indiana fan for a minute.
He has. So I would be happy. I would be happy for him. Okay, that was 2 minutes too many to talk about the Bucks, I'm sure, for most of you. So let's move forward to our buy or sell episode. Because it's a buy or sell, I think that the best objective is for you to answer one of these buy or sell prompts for yourselves. We have a bunch here. Who knows how many we'll get through? It depends on how long-winded we get. But we're going to talk about everything from different training techniques and strength training techniques and how that impacts our ability to run faster. We're going to talk about running shoe-related buy or sells. We're going to talk about things about post-race. It spans the gamut of topics. So it's going to go from like the heavy science stuff all the way to some fun stuff related to running culture. So you guys ready to dig in?
Let's do it.
Head nods. Perfect. Let's do it. So our first one, our first buy or sell is that plyometric training will help me at the marathon distance. So just to give a little bit of context for people, plyometric training are exercises where you're doing explosive type exercises. It might be something like box jumps. It could be something like a balanced lunge hop. It could be dropped squats. It's anything that's high velocity. So the buy or sell is buy or sell that plyometric training will help at the marathon distance.
But David should go first since he's actually been competitive at the marathon distance recently.
Oh, man, that's
no pressure.
I don't even know if I go that far, if I've been competitive or not. But
I would say you are. That's me.
Everyone's competitive at the marathon distance, because that's what I love about running. No matter how fast or slow you are, you're competitive somewhere, probably with yourself. That's what running is. But David is the fastest by a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm gonna be a hard buy on this, and I'm gonna come at it from an angle that I think a lot of people probably aren't thinking of. Now, the plyometrics and working on explosiveness and power and those types of things can make you faster in short distances where you really need to capitalize on that amortization phase, really explode off of your foot. And I guess a plyometric, first off, like, yeah, there's like a couple phases to that where you land and you have to really absorb the load. There's a time in between and then you pop off. And that really matters in the short distances. And does it matter as much in the long distances? I would argue that it does, but from a bone health standpoint, with long distance running, that can be a relatively catabolic process where you have a lot of inflammation in your body. If you're not taking care of yourself, you can really be breaking things down. And you hear about stress fractures all of the time. And if you can incorporate some level of skipping, some plyometric, whether it's box jumps, A skips, B skips, even strides, I'll count that, like karaoke, like get your bones stressed in a couple of different ways. And that can really help on the anabolic side of things where you're building things up and might be able to make your body a little bit more hardy. Does it make you faster? Hard to say if it'll actually make you faster over 26.2. I would love to see some data on that. I don't really know off the top of my head. But from a health standpoint and keeping you healthy and making sure that your bones can actually take the training that you're doing, I think I'm a buy on this.
I'll add on really quick because my brain actually, I totally agree with you. I'm a hard buy on this as well. I actually wasn't thinking about the bone health top of mind, but I completely agree with that. And just for long-term, like your longevity and keeping things where they should be, 100%. There are a lot of studies that corroborate that plyometric exercises. One study looked at a 6-week program. Another one looks at integrating plyometrics into your warm-up. Both of those in recreational runners improved running economy. And so if you have a more efficient time on the ground, which is all about short time and having an efficient stride, it's going to improve your ability to do that over 26 miles. No, it's not, you know, 100-meter dash. That's not what we're talking about here. But your ability to improve your running economy is what actually matters the most over those 26 miles. So I would say there's a lot of evidence for the bone side, and there's a lot of evidence for the running economy side, which is what really matters. And I think part of that is there was another one of the studies that I was looking at, a recent study, I think it was in 2022, compared heavy resistance training to plyometrics as it came to running economy improvements. And it was a systematic review between those two types of protocols. And it was plyometrics that won out. Again, that doesn't mean that heavy resistance training is bad. We know it's good for things like bone health and all that kind of stuff. But when it came to running economy, it was plyometrics that won out. So I am a huge buy on integrating plyometric exercise. That doesn't mean that everyone should add plyometrics right away, because they are hard to do and they're a different type of demand on your body. So if you're not ready for it, they could cause more harm than good. Also, if you are like heavy into a training cycle and you are trying to balance your recovery with your training load and you can't add on something like, yes, it might be beneficial, but maybe not right now, you know, save those plyometrics for another time to build your running economy for that new training block. But just because something's good doesn't mean we should add it now. It all is going to depend on your circumstances. What you got, Matt?
I would say definitely adding on to what you two said and then adding on to that comment. And from a programming standpoint, when you add things into your season, your progression is really important. If you're not training for anything crazy or you're not close to a goal race, yeah, you can totally add this stuff on. But like Nathan said, you have to be careful, because while there's a very high benefit, there's also very high risk. There's some very good things you need to think about before you just start jumping into this, no pun intended, about do you actually have the force to produce this? Because doing plyometrics is working not only elasticity, but it's working on power. Power is a combination of force and velocity. If you don't have the force to do this, you are putting yourself at risk. So having something that builds you into this safely is actually really important to go, hey, starting with some, you know, heavier resistance training, things like that is really important before you go into this. I'm going to add to the large buy on this. My bias in this being that my research is in aging matches runners. And one of the things I found is that power, elasticity, all that stuff is something we lose with age. And I think that's one of the biggest differences that I found in my research between those that have kind of a higher risk for certain types of injuries and those that don't. And you already lose that stuff. So from an aging perspective, I think doing some kind of strength training, the kind of the goal being eventually, potentially over years, working into doing plyos is really good, because it doesn't matter what age you are. You know, I know the systematic review you're talking about that compared like heavy, slow resistance training to plyometrics. Although it's slightly different, you can still get strength gains from plyometrics. And you see there's a lot of very good research in older individuals on this going, yeah, people should be jumping. You have to work into it. But I always think like the type of strength or supplementary work you should do should be different than what your primary exercise is. Like if you're running, for example, you don't need, like if you're going to do something to supplement that, it doesn't need to be high repetition weights. That doesn't, you're already doing that. You want to work on different systems and make sure you're a balanced athlete. So I think plyometrics and power is super important. It's also very, again, very related to sports performance economy. And even over the marathon distance, when you do a lot of marathons, you can sometimes lose some of that speed. So maintaining that, I think from balancing yourself out and from an overall health perspective is such a good thing. But as Nathan said, and like as David said, phenomenal for bone density. If you listen to the episode I did with Rich Willey, it was great talking about that. But as Nathan mentioned, you got to be careful when you do this. If your goal races in a week, you should not be adding this in. This is a, hey, you know what? I'm in my base phase, or I'm just kind of getting, you know, kind of my feet under me, and I want to just add something new when I'm not adding too many variables in. Yes, it's powerful. It's also potent. So yeah, just be a little cautious, but it's great.
And definitely just to say, there's, you know, just a callback to Rich Willey's episode, the number of foot contacts that you need, that's how plyometrics are dosed, is by the amount of times your foot hits the ground or your feet hit the ground. And it can be as low as 25 sometimes to have the benefit you need. So it's not a lot. And so it's easy to overdose this because it's like, oh, I should do, you know, ton, like three different jumping exercises, three sets of 10. So that's not what it is. It's much lower. So
quality over quantity with any of the more intense strength or power training. It's not endurance running. You're going to be working a different system. You got to focus differently.
Cool. All right. This next buy or sell, we're turning to the shoe world. So this one is super trainers that cost over $200. Buy or sell. So some examples would be the Super Blast. Another example would be the On Cloud Monster Hyper. Buy or sell?
First of all, I'm going to cause some problems. I don't think that On Cloud Monster is a super trainer. I'm just going to put that out there. I think my justification is off topic. The midsole, the full length, is not super foam. I think it's more closer to something like...
I thought the platform was.
No, it's
the center part of it was
center,
all
but not the whole thing.
Well, the outer, it's like a casing. It's almost like the Spectre.
Kind of, but it's also not like above the 40 millimeter, which maybe that's me
all
defining
right,
it.
Right.
Like
it's
the
40
Super Blast,
millimeters. It's not
whatever.
Over 40 millimeters.
Yeah. The Skyward X, the Super Blast, the, what's
no,
it called?
Skyward
the
Adizero, X, yeah.
Skyward X, the Primex, series.
Strong.
Those I think are the Cloud Monster Hyper. I don't totally think so.
All right.
But is it just okay? Fine.
But, but answer the question.
Over,
I guess
over 200. It depends.
Nope.
I'm gonna
buy or sell, bro. You can always tell why it
dropped
depends.
A bro, on that too.
For certain products, buy. For other ones, sell. So the Super Blast for $200, I actually think is a great deal.
It's $225,
$225. That thing has lasted forever. It's lasted twice as long as a lot of other shoes have for me. So for the Super Blast, I would definitely say a buy because it's got an incredible amount of versatility in terms of only 8.4 ounces for men's size 9. So like that thing can still move. It's not the fastest shoe, but it can also handle long runs. If I had to do an ultra, a road ultra, that would be the shoe I would pick without even thinking about it. The Skyward X, the Primex, I don't know. There's some versatility concerns that I have. I'm sorry, the hand motions, but yeah, buy for Super Blast. I might be a sell on some of the other ones. I don't know if I'm allowed to do that.
David, what do you think?
I think it's a tough answer because is it a buy for literally any shoe over $200 at this point? It's crazy that the market is at this.
Yeah.
But if I am going to look at it at face value for what it's worth at that category, super shoes at 250, super trainers, give or take 200 to 225. And assuming that a normal premium trainer is going to be what, 170 now, probably? Mm-hmm. 170, 180.
You're right. Yeah. 160, 170. Yeah.
So I think the Bondi is at like 170 now, right? I think. Yeah. I know. It's crazy. I think it's a tough one. Man.
Nathan picked the good one.
Two of my
that caused
favorite
problems.
Shoes. I don't know. I'm going to be a buy. I'm going to be a buy. And I think it's going to be because of what it can add to the arsenal. Now, I do think there has to be some durability things that are addressed if you're going to pay that much money for a shoe that's not a racing shoe. you know, where it's, okay, well, this is streamlined for performance. You're only going to get X amount of uses out of it. You're, you know what you're buying. You know, if you're going to get a shoe that's more on the training side of things, I want it to be on the training side of things. And I want to make sure that it can last on my feet. So some of this, I think, does still need a little bit more time to play. But three of my favorite shoes in the last couple of years, one of them was the Super Blast. That thing is, I mean, you can run that thing till the cows come home. Another one is the Cloud Monster Hyper. That thing has a thick slab of Helon HF the entire way, man.
Dude, that thing's so... It's fairly... I mean, it's fairly firm. It's not that I don't like it. That's just... It's so... On, you got to soften your super foams.
I don't know. I find it very cushioned. I mean, it's a little bit firm because of the cloud tech around it, but I mean, that's what makes it a little firm. But the actual bouncy soft part of it in the midline of that footbed.
So now I want to put some parameters on this, because we obviously come at this from a perspective of people who get to test. I mean, look at our shoes behind us. We have all these shoes. So now let me frame. Oh, do you want to finish something before I frame it?
I think I have
this has been a very, very fun shoe for me. And I had said at one point in the chat, I said, shut up and take my money.
So, yeah, you did. Yeah. So you got to say bye.
Nate can say that. Like, this has been like a shoe that has put a big smile on my face, having some of that new generation tech and being
the Cloud Monster Hyper
sack shoe. Yeah. And the Skyward X is really nice too. I think I like the Cloud Monster Hyper better, but there's been a few of these super trainers that have come out that I have really liked. The SC trainer, I haven't liked that one as much. Is that even a super trainer now? Is that over 40? Can you
SC trainer? No, it's
40. So it's not a super trainer anymore. Okay.
I mean, what do we define super trainer as? Whatever.
Well,
but
if you're talking the client says
it has to be over 40 millimeters.
Nathan, go.
Let me frame this a little bit and just see how you respond to this. So this doesn't have to be as hard buy or sell. When you're thinking about this, obviously, we have our perspective as people who are able to test a ton of shoes. We do not pay out of pocket for most of the shoes that are behind us, which obviously changes it changes the like visceral impact of having to hit buy and seeing money come out of our bank account. Now, if you're thinking about yourself or people you know who are like, hey, I'm into running, like I like running, and I just need to start from scratch because my shoes are worn out and I need to buy another one or two pairs. Let's just say somebody who wants to get one or two. Is going the extra $50 for a super trainer worth it for the people who are just going to get...
You're changing the question.
I am. I know. I'm putting new parameters on it.
Well, now it's a sell because this is someone who's just looking to get a pair of shoes on their feet. But I don't think super trainers are marketed at those people.
Tell me more.
So I think it's an unfair question.
I'm going to be honest, Nathan. That's kind of what I was thinking about. Is I try to look at price as someone who is fairly cheap, and also always thinking about this in terms of like the Super Blast. Yeah, again, was that shoe that it lasted forever? I can't say again, even with the Skyward X, that I'm wearing through the outsole a little bit quick, right? So for me, if I'm going to pay that much money, not only do I want the performance, I want the durability to last, because it's going to cost almost twice what other shoes are going to cost. So I expect double the durability. And thus far, I'm just not seeing that. And you answer your question, that further pulls me toward a sell. As much as I love the Super Blast and I would buy that with my own money, a lot of the other stuff yet is not where it's not far enough along for me to say a definite buy. I think I'd rather have my, you know, $140 training shoe and then suck it up and have my like $250 racing shoe rather than having two really expensive ones. And the other thing I would say, just from a variability perspective, again, talking about you're just need a new pair of shoes, I'd rather have personally shoes that are different, right? Two shoes that are different in terms of a training suit and a racing shoe, because I want different stimulus. And especially for runners out there on average that don't, again, we have had to learn to adapt. Most people don't get the opportunity to test as many shoes, but there are some risks associated with bouncing around a bunch of shoes all the time. We've also had some minor aches and things here and there that I'm sure others do with very, but I think overall, I'm a sell because I'd rather, in my mind, have two distinctly different shoes than two shoes that are like almost too similar, because I'm looking at this from a performance and a health standpoint too, where why am I going to choose a super trainer over that good racing shoe that's also durable and I can use for a couple different things? But that's me. So I think at the moment, I'm a sell, even though I love the Super Blast, I would buy it with my own money.
David, anything else?
No, I mean, with the change in the question, I think anyone who hasn't had a pair of shoes in a while and is just looking to get anything on their feet should stay below 140.
Yeah. Dude, comment below if you say so, buy on this one.
I mean, I think it's a bad caveat to the question, but
no, it's fair. Nathan, I was changing the question. Yeah. I was just giving a whole new scenario to the question. Like, I wasn't trying to twist it.
Like, if I didn't run for 3 years, should I go buy a $200 pair of shoes? No.
I don't think I was saying that. I was just saying they haven't had one in a while.
Yeah.
No, they're running and they're just ready to replace their shoes. Like, let's say they've been running straight for 10 years and they usually have a couple pairs of shoes and they usually buy a Cumulus and an 880 or something like that. Like, oh, is it worth the extra to try a super trainer? That's the scenario I'm saying.
Well, if they have large volume, the Vomero, yeah, it's a great shoe.
I think enough, you're going to see a lot of trainers actually just become a little bit more super as they start integrating these foams anyway. So,
yeah.
Well, it's not over 40
millimeters.
Nathan,
are you a buy or sell?
So first, I was wrong. It is $200 for the Super Blast. I wanted to look it up. Right. So, correct. I stand corrected. It's only $200. I would say if I found them on sale, and also, like, if you're a medical professional or like a APTA member, you can get discounts on ASICs. So that would put it in a realm where I would buy that shoe, but I wouldn't have known to do that if I hadn't tested it out through Doctors of Running. And I probably wouldn't have taken the plunge, just like with how I functioned before this, like in buying my footwear. So I don't know. Let's move on to the next question.
I hope this one makes us just as uncomfortable.
All right. So this next one was inspired by some stuff that actually Andrea saw at a race. When she was there. And so the buy or sell is youths racing in Vaporflies. So, like, we should put parameters on youth. Do we think that it should be high school and under, or do we think it should be middle school and under?
I'm going to say middle school and under.
Okay. That's where my brain was at. So when you think high school, what do you think, David?
Yeah, when I'm thinking high school, there's a couple of different pressures on these kids' minds. If it's a runnable course and they're in a position where they might be able to get a scholarship and every second counts and who they're beating and where they're placing and are they making sections and are they making state and placing, I think that changes the dynamic a little bit. Not to say that all kids should have it. I'm just saying certain people might want to put themselves in a position where they feel like taking on that extra dollar amount is worth it to them. In a middle school sense, it's like, I don't know, they're so young. It's like, there's nothing really riding on someone who's below ninth grade. I mean, there's really nothing riding on anyone below 10th grade even. But I think at that point you're just developing, play different sports, have some fun. Like, I don't see any need to throw super shoes on these kids, and they're still developing, and their proprioception, their sense of balance and strength and like ability to use their body is also just not quite there yet either. And so putting them in a super spongy compliant shoe might not be the best thing for them. I don't think I would put a super shoe on anyone under the age of 13, maybe even 15.
Yeah. What about you, Matt?
I would totally agree that when you're a middle schooler or a kid, the only performance enhancing things you should be utilizing is good nutrition, good sleep, and adequate, appropriate strength training, along with having a variety of sports and not doing too much of one. I think those are the only things you should be utilizing. We don't know the impact of using performance enhancing shoes, because that's what they are, right? Economy improving, whatever you want to call it, shoes on younger athletes that are still rapidly developing. I think when you start getting in high school and things are kind of getting a little into that, like you're developing a little bit more. Yes, you'll keep growing into college and stuff like that, but things are kind of finishing a little bit more in that like mid to late high school. Plus, I can totally understand the pressures of getting a college scholarship or being competitive. I get that. But like David said, it's not the same thing in middle school or younger. So I think from a developmental standpoint, I would say a hard sell on super shoes for younger athletes in that area personally, until we have further data that says that there's not an impact or that you're really balancing things out. But I think, yeah, it's not, I think there's better places to invest that.
I agree. I'm a sell as well. And I think it also, y'all, I wasn't on the episode, I don't think, but y'all talked about kind of the you know, the benefit of doing your workouts in non-super shoes to get some of that stimulus. And I think that I feel like that kind of holds true as you go into these kids as well. Like you're just trying to like grow. That's all. That's like your main objective as a kid.
You should not have the pressure
well.
You should not have the pressure of like, oh, you need to hit this time. It's like, dude, just enjoy this so you don't hate it later.
I'm a sell as well. All right. Next question or next prompt. Regular super shoes, such as Vaporfly, Alphafly, perform better than 5 to 10K specific super shoes at that 5K to 10K distance. So this would be something like Takumi Sen versus Alphafly. This would say the Alphafly is actually better than Takumi Sen at those shorter distances. Buy or sell?
I'm a sell.
Great. Matt, what about you? I'm just kidding.
Moving on. Now it's a funny, it's a sell with the caveat there because I don't think that the regular super shoes are better than the 5K, 10K options for the 5K, 10K distance. I think they are as good as the 5K, 10K racers at those distances. And it's going to really depend on the person, on what they want out of the shoe. Like I could totally see someone taking a Takumi Sen over a Vaporfly or Alphafly in a road 5K or 10K. And I might do it myself, especially if there's a lot of cornering or something on that course. But if it's a well-groomed course, I don't think that there's any performance loss wearing a Vaporfly instead of, let's say, a Streakfly or Takumi Sen. You obviously see a lot of the pros wearing the regular super shoes in 5K, 10K situations. Didn't Chrissy Gear just run like a mile in the Cielo X1?
Yeah, she did.
I got to double check that.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like, no, obviously,
I'm not surprised, honestly. Yeah. That shoe, like, even though it's heavier, like, that thing has some bounce and it will surprise you. You're like, what the? Where did this come from?
What is this?
Yeah. So, like, you can totally race in the.
As long
other
as the outsole
shoes.
Stays intact.
Yes.
For me.
But I don't think they're better than the other shoes. They just are as good. So I think it really just depends on personal taste at that point and what you want out of the shoe. And I've obviously run 5K and 10K in the regular super shoe over the Takumi Sen. I have done that a few times, but that's usually well-groomed courses that I'm going in straightaways on with minimal turns. If I really had to do a lot of turns or even if it was a little bit of a cross style race, if there was some dirt or runnable grass or something and it wasn't a spike type of race, like I might go Takumi over those other ones.
I agree with David. I think it depends. For me personally, it is going to be a buy actually, because I have been doing a lot better just because I think what we're training in right now with a lot more cushion, a shoe like I used to use the Endorphin Elite for all my 5Ks because I'd be like, oh, you know what? I'm going to try this other shoe and I see a fast high school. I'm like, no, I'm going to use the fast thing I feel most comfortable with, which at that time was the Endorphin Elite. It's been replaced by something, but that's okay. So I think, I think some of those shoes personally for me, I would probably go for the bigger thing just because my mechanics aren't as comfortable with the quote unquote specific 5K, 10K shoes as much anymore. And to add on that, I haven't said anything about this, but I not too long ago ran a 1745 stroller 5K in the Cielo X1 around the Rose Bowl, which is a fairly hilly course, and I did not expect that. And I was like, oh, whoa.
Is that the one that replaced the Elite?
No, this one?
Yeah, said something to replace the Endorphin Elite.
No, it's the Metaspeed Edge Paris.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's solid.
That's so my go-to, like 5K, 10K. Maybe if I did a half, I'd grab that first.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I'm also a sell on this one with David. Pretty much the exact rationale, so I don't need to rehash it. I just think that it really depends on what you respond to and what you're ready to run in. And I think that some people respond just as well to Takumi Sen, which we're talking about like it's not this high stacked, super high cushioned, stiffened plated thing like it is. But there are some 5K, 10K racing shoes that aren't the same as like a Takumi Sen. They're more traditional. They just have like a, I don't know, more flat construction and not all the rocker stuff. I do think like the rocker geometry and the foam technology and the stiffening agents still matter. But if they're in a lighter package, I think it just depends on what you respond to. And ultimately, you don't know unless you go get it tested out. So I say they're not better. They're potentially better. So
I will say too, like just one data point that we've had over a few years now is looking at the company that Matt is wearing right now, Adidas, having that Road to Record type event that they've been doing over the last few years.
Literally, and just there happened. Was a,
yeah, it just happened. Yeah, yeah, it didn't go quite as fast as previous years, but they were still cooking.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Yomif Gajelcha ran a 3:54 mile road mile. Right.
Yeah. And a 13 flat 5K in the Takumi Sen and a 27 flat. They just barely missed going under 27. But a couple years ago, like there was like four or five guys under 27 in the Takumi. I mean, like that, regardless of what shoe was on your feet, you're breaking 27 minutes on the road. That is insanely fast. So to say, like, would they have run faster in an Adios Pro 3? I don't know if they would have, you know, like. Would they go, okay, so they're going to go around 2640, 2630 on the road? Like
that difference, like, that running economy difference
between, like, smaller.
If the running economy difference between a Hyperspeed from ASICS and, you know, an Alphafly is somewhere between 1 and 5% for people, like the difference between a Takumi Sen and the Alphafly is going to be like nothing, you know? So it's, you're talking 0.2%. I'm making that number up, but it's very, very small. All right, I'm going to move us to our next prompt. So the next one is still in shoe world, and it's trainers without rubber outsoles. So this would be rubberized EVA outsoles. Buy or sell?
Hard. I mean, for me personally, hard sell. Hard sell. I like a trainer that lasts more than 10 miles. So this is a hard sell for me personally.
Did the like Carbon X 3 and 2, did those last for you at all?
No, I shredded through those.
Okay.
Yeah. I will say,
what about the new Cumulus?
Honestly,
the new Cumulus ditched their rubber.
The real reason I have been running in it because I didn't find it very comfortable. So I don't know. I got my minimum testing miles and I'm like, I'm going to go run in something else. Like, I feel just that the toe spring is too much. I'm sure other people love it. The toe spring is too much for me. So I don't know.
David, what about you?
Yeah, I don't have those ones on me anymore. Like the Carbon X 2 or the Under Armour Velocity Elite. I don't mind it. I'm a buy. I think for the right person, it's great. I think it softens that landing just a tad, and like the traction on them aren't horrible. Like if you're running on well-groomed road surfaces, it's usually pretty good. And I don't know. I like the Mach 4 and Mach 5. I didn't have any issues there. My Carbon X 2 lasted me 200 miles. You know, that's what I can ask of it. And it probably would have gone longer. I just didn't really, I don't know. We had other shoes we had to run in. So
yeah.
I'm not opposed to it, but I also don't tear up my shoes in 5 miles like Matt does.
Totally.
So I think it depends.
For the listeners, that has actually happened before.
Yeah. I think
he'll
for
like
me,
literally shred an outsole off. Like not even like with rubber. Like he'll like however he scuffs his foot, sometimes he'll rip off that posterior lateral piece.
Yeah. My favorite thing is when that happens. It'd be like 10 miles. My favorite is when that happens and then whoever the rep is for the company is like, hey, can you send me like the number of that? Hey, can we have a conversation? I'm like, yeah, it's just me. Sorry.
I may have been a buy on this like a year ago, but there's one experience that's pushing me to sell on this. Overall, I don't like the idea of like decreasing durability in something that pay a lot of money for.
To be fair, rubberized EVA versus just a straight up foam.
Correct.
Outsole. Cause like some of them will thicken it a tiny bit. Like the Carbon X2 did do that.
Yes. I think the thing that changed my mind was I really loved the soft, that kind of soft landing that you're talking about, David, and how quiet it is. Like the Mach 5 was one of my favorites, not favorite trainers that year, but I did love that experience of just like how quiet and soft it was running. But they added rubber to the Mach 6 and I like it more. And so I think that like kind of changed my like, okay, so maybe that didn't really enhance although it's a new supercritical EVA foam that they put in there. It's like a very different shoe.
Yeah.
So it's hard to like directly compare those two, but I think across the board, I really like the idea of having a shoe, that's going to last a long time, that rubber won't be the outsole won't be the reason why. Cause right now, the reason why we should typically, besides you, Matt, get to the end of the life of a shoe is because we break down the midsole enough, which is what right. the shoe is supposed to do. So if a shoe isn't going to do that, I'm like, that's kind of a bummer. But all right.
I take off the midsole.
Yeah. You just get rid of it.
Into it enough. Yeah.
Yeah. He just runs in, you know,
yeah. It's just the insole. Shoes
yeah. By default.
Yeah. All right. We are going to step out of running shoe world and we're going to go into other categories like training and professional running and things like that. So this next one is a training type question and it's buy or sell the concept of run slow to run fast. So before you answer buy or sell, is someone willing to explain? I feel like this is everywhere right now in terms of on social media. It's one of the most common things that you'll probably hear is run slow to run fast. Another way you may have heard it is zone two running, but run slow to run fast. Mm. Somebody else want to explain?
I would differentiate the two.
I would agree, but I would say that they're pretty, like when it comes to what you hear and see on social media, they are pretty tied together for a lot of people.
So is the question going to be run slow to run fast or is it going to be zone two to run fast?
Let's keep it run slow to run fast.
Okay. Because that changes my answer.
All right. What's your answer?
I mean, I'm actually a buy on the run slow to run fast, but to talk about the reasons why, it's on the recovery side of things. When you look at what most people are running in the marathon, I think the average person probably isn't breaking 3 hours, right? What's the average marathon time like? We can get that. Nate's on it. I'm going to guess it's somewhere around high threes, low fours.
This is what Dr. Google says. 4:14:29 for men and 4:42:09 for women.
Okay. And what mile pace is that?
So that'll be like a 9:15, like a little over nine for men and then a little bit under 10 for women.
So I think this is why this is a hard buy for me, because how many people run at that pace on a daily basis when that's their race pace, right? Like that's the issue here. I think the larger thing that we're talking at hand is people are running at way too close of a percentage of what they're actually racing at. And I think if you can take the time to slow down on your easy days and really focus on that recovery piece and you get some good sleep and you come back and then you do run fast at your workouts, you run slow so that you can run faster on the days that you're running fast. But if you don't ever run fast, running slower isn't necessarily going to make you faster. So at some point or another, you are going to have to test your gears out and you're going to have to do some workouts. But you can build off of your workouts better if you run slower on those easy days and really take care of yourself. Because you look at some of these people, it's like you got guys that are racing at 4:30 per mile for 26 miles or 4:35 to 4:40. If they're running in the low twos and they are running their easy days at like what 7-8 minute pace a lot of times, sometimes even nine slower. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Like they are really slowing down some of these people. But then on their workout days, they're running like absolute savages. They're running faster than I can dream of on their workout days. And it like there's a time to go slow and there's a time to go fast. And I think if you want longevity in the sport and you want to really build off of what you're doing, you can't dig yourself into the ground. And when I say run slow to run fast, that doesn't mean always run slow. That there is a time to run fast. I want to make that very clear. Yeah.
I totally agree. Next. I'm a buy on this as well. And I think the piece that gets missed when you're maybe again, just kind of a callback to what you might see fed to you on social media is you miss that part of the reasons why that you run slow. And a huge part is you're not going to get faster if you only run slow the whole time. Your legs do need to learn how to do that. You have to be able to generate that sort of power. There's a lot that goes into being able to run faster when you want to run fast. But if you're running your workouts hard and then you're kind of redlining all of your other easy runs, you're just not going to be able to recover. And I think part of running slow to run fast is a way to allow yourself to run in a sustainable manner where you're not going to get injured. So you can just have consistency over years. And if you can have consistency over years, that's how you're really going to, the way you get faster at running is by running a lot. And you're only going to be able to run a lot if you are consistent, coming from someone who's just come off of like months of not being able to run because of a ligament tear. But it still holds true for me too. Like I'm not reaching my potential because I haven't been able to be consistent in the running. And so I think that running slow allows you to really hit your workouts hard. It also allows your body to recover. I think the other part is that physiologically, when you hit different intensities, it's called like the SED principle is pretty ubiquitous for exercise prescription. And the SED principle is specific adaptation to impose demands. And so if you want your body to adapt in a certain way, you have to put the right stimulus on it. With the running slower, puts you in a different intensity for your cardiovascular system, which stimulates different changes in your musculoskeletal and cardiovascular system, like increased capillary density and increased mitochondrial density, all these things that work for aerobic exercise, and you need them for those endurance events. So I think it's a combination of that longevity piece, like you were talking about, plus the actual physiological adaptations that you want. You have to be getting some time in that easier efforts.
I would like to also frame it in a way, like when you think about it from the running slow standpoint, if you go and run 8 miles and you go and run quote unquote slow, slower than what maybe if you're pushing your easy days, you're running for longer. Like you are literally on your feet for longer periods of time, and you will create aerobic adaptations in that self. Like I don't see your body, I don't know, it's not going to make the, it's not going to make or break it. Like if you go slower, like it's only going to help you on those easy days.
Yeah. And I think actually that's a really good point. Cause if you're training based off of miles or if you're training based off of time, that totally changes things. Cause if you decide that you've just been running hard every run and you're like, oh, I'm going to run slow now, your mileage will dip. Like if you want to do it smart, because otherwise, like you said, if I go from running every run at I used to do this, every run that I ran was like a 7 to 7:15 minute per mile. And then I had to like,
I don't even do that.
I know there's a reason why my life from 2017 to 2018 was terrible. But my running life, my actual life was just fine. But I think just to make that clear. But then when I brought myself to a slower pace, I wanted to keep running the same miles per week, but my hours running went so high. And so I actually switched to a time-based, like, oh, I'm going out for 40 minutes. That was a very nice change for me. And it wasn't hard for me to get over like my weekly mileage dropping because really our body doesn't know miles anyway. It knows time and intensity. And so if your body is getting the stimulus for a certain amount of time, you're going to adapt to that stimulus. So anyway, Matt, what do you got? Do you buy or sell this?
I'm going to be the different person. I'm going to say sell because I think there's a better way we can say this. So I do agree with it, but I think the better way we could say this is learn to run a variety of paces and know when to run each pace.
Because I feel like you just have to run fast. So no, you're saying run slow to run fast.
No, that's not. Run slow and fast just creates a dichotomy.
Create a variety of paces. Yes, it's a dichotomy. Run slow to run fast. That's the definition of what a dichotomy is.
But there are other paces besides just slow and fast. Learning to go, hey, like doing some like really fast strides at the end of a run is also good. Learning to run immediate moderate pace is also good. Like I think we need to get out of that dichotomy because I think people will get stuck on, oh, I'm only running fast, I'm only running slow, instead of going, there's a variety of paces. Like, you're not going to run your 5K pace for a marathon and vice versa. It's kind of learning, especially through effort, to go, what does this feel like? And I think a lot of times there's a very negative connotation with running slow. It could be like, hey, you know what? You need to run at a kind of a certain effort level for today to be able to recover, rather than saying, oh, you're running slow, because there's negative connotation with that, which I know sounds, maybe that doesn't sound like, it sounds dumb, but I think it's important for how you look at yourself, especially when you start getting into like high schoolers. Like, go tell a high schooler, go, hey, run slow. And they're like, I don't want to post that on Strava. Whereas if you say, hey, like, I want you to keep this in a very controlled, low level effort so we can recover for tomorrow, because tomorrow is going to be a moderate run or tomorrow is going to be a hard run. I think there's
a time and place to slow down if you say that, though.
No, they don't. No.
I was super controlled at my 6:20 and they race at like a 6:05. And I'm like, yeah, bro, no, that was not.
I think teach people to run learn to have different gears rather than just fast and slow.
Yeah. I think the differentiation when I say like run slow to run fast later, that doesn't necessarily imply 5K pace. Like there is a day where you're going to have either a 5K type workout, maybe you're on the track doing 400s, 800s, Ks, whatever. And then that day might also be a long tempo run, but it's a different stimulus.
Right. I think I get concerned because people take things to the extreme. If social media people are like, oh, right. I'm just going to only run slow. And then all of a sudden, like, well, I'm going to go run a 5K, and then they like blow up the first 100 meters, or they get hurt, which I've actually seen happen, where people are like, oh, I thought I need to run slow, and somebody like absolutely sprints the 5K and then like pulls a hamstring at your local, like your local front run. You're like, what are you doing? Like, so learning to pace and do the right thing at the right time is I think a better thing. And I'll just trademark that and start putting that out on social media, get famous. I'm just kidding. I don't want fame. I want to be left alone.
Now that was a good differentiation.
Yeah. No, it's good. And I think we all agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's important, especially when you come to actually like communicating about this stuff. All right. We have a couple more here. Buy or sell the post-race beer?
Sell. Hard sell. No offense, but like when I'm getting to the end of a race and I like I will run all out, a beer is not what I want. Like I want to like have something easy on the stomach, hydrate appropriately, not have alcohol in my system. That might be me though, because when I am in those situations, I am extremely sensitive to things that get put in my system. And I will, from personal experience, I don't know how professional this is, having done a few beer miles in college. If you've exercised intensely, for me personally, alcohol is very intense and it hits me very hard. So I don't like that. So I'm a hard sell. A beer is the last thing I'm thinking about after I almost died.
I mean, to be fair, anyone who's racing, they're working very hard. And yeah, when they finish, judging. I don't think anybody is like, yeah, give me a beer. The second they finish the race.
I disagree. Except for there's a lot of people like just
yeah, Emma Bates had it right there at the finish line.
Right there and then. That is admirable to go run 220 something and just be like, all right, let's do it.
That's the post-race at like workout. It's like, can I shotgun this beer after this? I can't.
But I think give yourself 10, 15 minutes, slowly make your way over when your body has settled, and I'm a buy. I don't know. I like it. Most races give it to you for free. You know, they give you at least one. Helps numb the pain a little bit too. I mean, even though it does hit you a little bit more, like those cramps in your calves and your quads and stepping off of curbs and all the misery that you feel after races, it kind of masks it a little bit.
So like you're talking about the analgesic effects of alcohol. Just
have yeah. You just have a little bit, get some carbs back in you. Like that's not a bad thing.
Nathan, tiebreaker.
It's funny. I'm
and for the culture,
I'm gonna say I'm a buy, but here's my personal experiences when it comes to it. Is like I finished the race, in my mind I'm like, oh, the idea of a beer with friends like commemorating this day sounds really fun, like at the tent, you know, after you finish. So my mind is there, my body is like, I don't want like anything right now. So like usually I don't even want, I don't know, depends on how hot it is that day or whatever, but usually I don't really want anything. And then I taste it in my mouth. I'm like, this is great. So my tongue's happy. And then I get like two or three sips in and I'm like, no, I'm done. So I go through this like, it's just this battle of like, yes, no, yes, no, yes. But our local like 5 mile run that I want y'all to come out here and do it, it's in March, the Bach Run. It's a super fun event at our, it's called the Bach Run, like Point Bach is the like Bach beer kind of thing. So
we should probably get Bach to run that.
Yeah. Bach needs to run the Bach.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're Bach the most Bach. Intense super shoe we can find. Like three pairs of Alpha Flies so we can run fast.
That would be super fun. But basically they have a huge beer tent. It's at our local brewery. And I don't know. What we do is they give you, you get three beers. You get a lot of beer after this race. And I just bring...
That's a lot after a five-mile race.
I bring a Nalgene and I fill it up with the beers and I bring it home and put it in the fridge for later. Now that's the win right there.
I thought we were talking about right after the race. Not like, hey, I'm going to take this and save it for later.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I'm cheating.
Yeah.
So...
I will say to clarify too, like after like a 5K or 10K, it's like, I don't know if I really want it. I think it's more half marathon up.
Sure. Cause it's a different type of fatigue that you feel at the end.
Right.
Right.
I can see that. I think for me as soon as I finish, the first thing I'm thinking about is I know this is going to suck later. So what can I do to optimize any kind of recovery? And I know there is actually some research on this and the research is a little bit varied on this. And so I personally, alcohol is not really a nutrient So if you're going to get carbs in, I think there are, from a performance standpoint, I think
that's
there
not
are
the point,
better
though.
Ways to do. I'm just saying, okay. Giving my reason
take
for
a hard
sell
shot.
On this.
I don't know. It's
oh, so one of the first real 5Ks I did in high school was called the crawfish crawl, which I was actually also working at as because the Fit Right Northwest was sponsoring it. So I went down there to what's Cook Park, and I finished. I don't think I won. I think it was second, but it was a good 17-ish minute 5K. And they were giving out shots of vodka at the end. Some hard out liquor company was there. And I was like, I was underage too. Even if I was above 21, I was
doing a shot after a race would be hard.
No, thanks.
Okay.
So I have one more question, but do we just want to end it there? All right.
If you got one more, we'll do one more.
Okay. This is our last one.
Sip, and then we'll
get through. Don't give us a lame one.
Now I'm nervous.
You got to do one that causes drama, that we end on
This is the one
just
I got.
Just make me yell at Matt. That's all we're asking for.
So buy or sell, minimalist footwear is a dying breed.
Sell.
Sell being that it is a dying breed or buy being that, wait, what?
So minimalist footwear is a dying breed. If you buy that, you think it's dying out. If you sell it, it means it's not dead. It's not a dying breed.
I'm a sell because I think there will always be a place for it. Some people like having lower to the ground shoes, more flexible designs. I think even with how extreme things have been getting, you're seeing more of a push towards these Vivo barefoots or these types of shoes that are very low profile, maybe not for the running standpoint per se, but walking around, I'm seeing way more minimalist footwear again, where I think people kind of felt things tipping way too far in one direction where they're almost craving some of that more minimalist designs. So I don't think it's going away. I don't think it's a dying breed. I think it's here to stay. It may not be as numerous as the Max Cushion shoes right now in the abundance that it is, but I don't think it's a dying breed by any means.
I'm a follow up on that. I totally agree. I was really surprised. Zero Shoes has been great. I've really enjoyed a lot of their shoes as something I don't necessarily run in them primarily, although I will run to test them. It's a great shoe to walk around in. I was really surprised when I was in the PDAC Portland Airport recently. I saw probably 4 or 5 people wearing Zero Shoes, and I was like, "Oh totally. Sweet!" Mm-hmm. I was like, "Yeah."
I have several patients that do.
Yeah, I agree that I don't think it's not at the height of where minimalist stuff was. It's now a appropriate category of footwear. I don't think that type of footwear is appropriate for everyone. I think a lot of people aren't willing to don't have the necessary work and background and stuff to be able to use that appropriately. But I think it's not dying. I think if anything, there's more interest because whenever you have an extreme on one side, you're going to see a little more chatter on the other extreme. So I think, yes, I don't think it's a dying breed. So sell for sure.
It's a sell for me as well. I think no matter how in vogue maximal or maximalist or shoes are, you're going to have a group of people because there is going to be people with a very niche philosophy on this, very staunch, this is the way. And so that group is always going to exist. And there is a lot of good things out there about the benefits of these kinds of shoes. So I think they're going to be there. I think they should be there. I myself would love my body to be in a resilient enough spot where I was utilizing them as a tool more often in my running as well. You know, I think that would be cool. A cool way to do easy runs, my 30-minute easy stuff, in minimalist shoe, that would be awesome. I think just to get a very, very different stimulus on the body. So I don't know. I agree with y'all. I think it's here to stay. And it should, and I hope it does, and I hope it doesn't die out, and that these companies who do a good job making it, that they can stick around and keep doing well. Actually, probably one of the most telling things would be finding someone who just knows their sales. That would tell us if it's a dying breed or not. How are they doing? So
I would bet money that in most traditional running stores that it's probably not a primary thing. Sorry, my headphones.
But the companies themselves are probably
I think the companies themselves are doing well, but just that's not the in thing in running retail right now.
Totally.
But I think there's still a good place for them, and they're definitely selling online for sure.
Yeah. Well, great. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for this buy or sell episode. Feel free to drop other things below, whether it's your take on some of these. Oh, you want something? Say something, David?
Yeah. It could be a subjective buy or sell. Buy or sell on the Bucks making the NBA championship.
I'm a hard sell on that, even me. They are just, they're struggle bussing. But don't tell me the score. Don't look it up and don't tell me.
I don't have it up. Warriors got knocked out, man, I'm still mourning. You're just checked out. That horrible loss to the Kings. I'm still bad. I've barely watched any games this
That's
playoffs.
Fair. I get
still,
it.
I'm still sad boy about that, but
I'm sorry. Well, if you want to drop below your thoughts on the Bucks or the Warriors, David does need your condolences. Bach, our media manager, would love you cheering on his Pacers. If you're looking for a team to jump on and bandwagon, they could be your option. Assuming that the Bucks lost tonight and they'll probably lose the next game. But if you want to keep following what we're doing, you can go to doctorsofrunning.com. You can check us out at Doctors of Running on all social platforms. And we look forward to talking to y'all next time.